Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way, presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake. It is me, Rain Wilson, and...
It is I, Reza Aslan, grammatically correct.
Oh, listen, we've got a question today about music, and we really need someone to answer it. Where does music...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Come from. There's such a beautiful, mysterious, mystic quality to where music itself, you know, the song of the cosmos actually comes from. Who are we going to find to discuss this with us?
You may not know this about me, but I used to be in a band. I used to be in a rock band.
You were in a band?
I had a life as a musician in my early 20s.
Seriously, you were in a band in your early 20s?
I was in a band, yeah. I was the lead singer. Band called Pike. It's not a joke.
Pike.
I have a photo right here of me in my band, Pike. It was the 90s. Anybody with a guitar was in a band in the 90s.
Why were you named after a fish?
It's not a fish. It's more about the spear and, you know.
Why were you named after a spear?
I don't want to get too deep into it. We were called Pike. It had some Jesus connotations. Let's move on. Anyway.
Wait. Were you in a Christian rock band?
Well, I wouldn't call it a Christian rock band. It was a rock band, and we happened to be Christians. Those are two different things.
Did you ever play a gig outside of a church?
Yes. Did we also play gigs in church? Yes.
Okay.
So see, there's a difference.
Now, is Pike?
Right?
Was Jesus poked with a pike? Is that what? How does that work?
It's a long circuitous spiritual connection. But look, it's very much like the kinds of songs that we sang. You know, our songs were were the kinds of songs that, you know, well, it could have been about Jesus. It could have been about a girl. Who knows? It could have been either.
That would be a great game show question, wouldn't it? Kind of like you have to choose, you know, you have to pick, like, is this a song about Jesus or a song about love? Like, your love lifts me up to the clouds. Like, it could be Jesus. Could be a girl.
I'm going to say that one is definitely Jesus.
Yeah, that was Jesus.
I want to be on my knees all night. That one could be either. Like, it well, could be,
that's getting
could be
a
about a girl.
That's getting pornographic.
Could be about Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But what you're telling me right now is that you could be the authority to talk to us about where music comes from because you were in the early 90s Christian rock band Pike.
All I'm saying is if we're going to have a conversation about where music comes from, is it like a divinely inspired thing? Does it come from within? Is it about, you know, accessing some frequency out there? Or is it about just simply sitting down and doing the grind? You know, we have a rock star in our midst. We don't need to go and find one, but where are we going to get a rock star anyway? I mean, honestly, like what rock star is going to come on our podcast?
Well, Reza, as a matter of fact, my good friend, Jason Isbell, maybe you've heard of him. The Guardian described his songwriting as honest reflections about Southern identity and working class life that are rarely glamorous, but always incisive in their disenchantment. Yes, the Jason Isbell whose song Maybe It's Time was in your favorite movie, A Star Is Born.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about four-time Grammy winner, singer, songwriter, and guitarist Jason Isbell? Why would four-time Grammy winner Jason Isbell be on our podcast? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Because I called in a favor. But first, before we go to Jason, I need to hear some Pike. Give us a taste.
It's too much pressure.
I need to hear some Pike right now.
Maybe afterwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, as was said earlier, four-time Grammy winner, singer, songwriter, great human being and American, Jason Isbell is here. Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake.
I'm happy to be here. I admire you both and I'm happy to speak with you today.
Listen, before we get started, I mean, I don't want to like put Rain on the spot or anything, but you should just know that he's a really big fan of yours.
He likes weird music.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell just by the way he looks right now. He's trying not to be like all fan gushy. Okay.
I like people... him when he's blushing.
Southeastern is an album I've listened to as much or more than any other album that I own.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Up there with as many listens as let's go with like Blonde on Blonde and
wow.
Okay Computer and a handful Whoa. Of other amazing albums.
That is a pantheon right there.
That's big, yeah.
Rolling Stone's list of top 10 country albums for 2013.
That doesn't do it justice. So it's a lot it's a lot bigger than that.
That's actually an interesting place to start, Jason. Like so often people refer to you as a country music star or a country musician. I just wonder like how you feel about that. I mean, do you feel like that kind of boxes you in a genre that, sure, of course, you know, it's an influence and some of your songs definitely have like a country feel to them. But how do you feel when someone calls you a country musician?
Well, when they call me a country star, you know, I have to figure out which is more wrong, the country part or the star part. I'm a country person, I guess, by default, but I don't necessarily think I make country music. I make music that is influenced by country music, but probably equally influenced by rock and roll music and blues music and R&B music, which a lot of people mistakenly call soul music. And, you know, I don't think it's a genred kind of thing. You know, I try to stay away from things that I don't feel qualified to create, you know, so I'm making some form of my type of music, which is a combination of all the things that I like, but I don't consider myself really a country music singer.
You grew up in the South, obviously, right? Was it Alabama? Mm-hmm.
Alabama, all the way in.
That's what the South calls the South.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's a Southerner's South.
How much of that environment, being in the South, how much of that went into the kind of emotional intelligence of the music that you write?
I think a lot of it. You know, I had a conversation earlier with a friend of mine, Adia Victoria, who's a country singer and a blues singer from the South, and she and I were talking about these same things earlier. But you know, we came to the point that when you grow up in a sort of religious Southern background, I was an only child, and I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. My parents were teenagers when I was born, so they were always working real hard. And when I was really little, we lived in a trailer in my grandmother's yard, a single wide, right next to her driveway. And so I spent the majority of my time during the school year, either walking home to my grandparents' house or, you know, in the summer I would stay with my grandparents. And they had gardens and they had farm animals and they also had a lot of religion. My grandfather was a holiness Pentecostal preacher.
Wow.
And so it was serious. It was speaking in tongues, serious stuff. And every part of nature had some metaphorical connection to the story of the passion, you know, and every flower, every animal, every plant, every tree, everything had something to do with Jesus. And I think the lessons that stuck with me throughout my life from that were lessons of awareness and lessons of this sort of metaphorical connection to nature that our human psyche has, you know, and it fed a narrative that I think a lot of Southern writers and artists and musicians fall into this kind of story where, you know, I can use these roses and these trees and these flowers in the same way that, you know, they were used in religion for me when I was a child. So I do think that there are a lot of advantages I had growing up there and being a songwriter and an artist later on, you know, plus everybody's got to, if you're going to play music and write music, you got to get the blues one way or another. You know, you have to get your own version of it. And being a weirdo kid in front of a bunch of macho Alabama kids was my version of that very often, I think.
You know, the topic of our conversation is like, where does music come from? And obviously we're starting with you with some of the personal, like who's Jason Isbell? Where does it come from culturally, historically, environmentally? Personally, I'd love to hear more about, I know you've talked about it a lot, but how unsobriety and drinking culture influenced your music early on and then how sobriety influences your music later. But since you brought up the Pentecostal thing, that's something that is really, because Reza and I are both, you know, religious scholars. He's a professional religious scholar. I'm an amateur. But, you know, this Pentecostal idea and Pentecostalism, you know, brought music really hardcore into the churches.
Yeah, they had live electric music.
Like rock bands.
Nowadays, whether you're a Christian or not, you know that like most churches, you go there and it's like drums and a guitar and there's like a huge worship and everybody's dancing and going crazy and stuff. And people don't realize Pentecostalism invented that. Like before Pentecostalism, singing at church was a mighty fortress is our God. Mm-hmm. Then after Pentecostalism, it was like, wow!
Oh, yeah.
That must have been, for somebody who, you know, obviously had this childhood love of music, to see that in church married to spirituality and religion. And I love what you were saying, how like everything is a metaphor for the passion of Christ. Mm. You know, that must have had a huge effect on you, right?
It was. Yeah, that was everything. That was everything, you know. And I have managed to leave most of the guilt and the shame behind me on the path, but I kept the Holy Ghost fire, you know. I'm not a particularly religious person, but I did keep that sort of, you know, magic alive in a lot of ways. And that was how I bonded with my family. Like I was super close to my grandparents, you know, even when I was 15, 16, 17 years old, because I'd grown up playing music with them. We played music together and we watched baseball because that was the only thing we could watch where nobody would say the F word or show a titty or anything, you know? So we watched baseball and we played music together. And we got along even in the ages where you don't usually want to spend time with your grandparents. And it was because of that. Like they understood the rock and roll part of their spirituality. And so they understood the rock and roll part of me a little bit better.
But going even broader, what is this connection between, you talked about the fire of the Holy Ghost, and I love that, because really, we'll get to this later, but the Holy Spirit, isn't that just analogous to the muses of ancient Greece? But why do you think music goes hand in hand with worship? What is it about the passion of music, how music opens us up, that from the beginning of human history, there's been dancing and music going hand in hand with worship? You've rarely had worship without it.
Yeah, that's how we keep the record. You know, that's how we write it down when we don't know how to write, when we don't have anything to write on.
We sing it.
We sing it, and that way we remember it. And then when we sing it, you know, rhythm has an organic connection with how you feel and how your brain feels and how you move. And that part is just, I think, biology. I think you can't help but, you know, your heart rate elevates and it brings something out of you. But I think originally we sang it to remember it, you know, and I think that's the part that's really sort of sacred to me about music, because, you know, growing up in Alabama the way I did, I didn't know any black people. You know, we were all just poor white people, you know, and by poor, I mean, you know, fine, but, you know, we were all in the same boat down there and everybody was working and nobody was ahead. We had what we needed, but we were a very sort of exclusionary sort of community down there. And I didn't know anybody who looked different from me until I got into high school. So, you know, growing up down there, the only exposure I had to the Black American experience was that music. And I started listening to that and thinking, oh, no. What I've heard about these folks can't be true. You know, because the truth of it is they feel like this. And if they feel like this and they sound like this, then they got to be more like me than they are different from me. That's because they were keeping the record and they were passing that information to me. I was not going to go pick up and read a book about it, but I was going to listen to the music, you know.
That makes so much sense. This idea that, like, the emotion that's being conveyed by these different genres played by different, you know, races, different ethnicities, it becomes so familiar that you think to yourself, well, I felt that. So it must not be that much separating us, I guess.
Yeah, that was how it was for me. And then I started going and reading about it and actually getting to know people and asking the questions. But where I grew up, that was just not in the town, Green Hill, Alabama. There was nobody but white kids, you know. And so my first exposure to anybody's life that was different from mine was through music. And then I understood, oh, okay, this is how they get the truth across to people who wouldn't listen otherwise, you know.
I tell you, I have a memory of a trip to the South visiting friends. And every Sunday, for some reason, we would drive down this one road. And Sunday, 10 a.m., one church on one side of the road, parking lot full of black folks, walking into a church, exactly other side of the road, parking lot full of white families, going into a church across the road, so close, 100 yards away, but couldn't be more far apart.
Yeah, I went into a restaurant once in a part of the South when I was on tour 20 years ago when I first started touring. And it was a soul food restaurant, but it was also a country cooking restaurant. So they had two different menus and two different rooms, like separated by like a dividing wall. If you were into home cooking, you went over to this side. And if you're into soul food, you went over to this side. Oh, and the food was the same. It was the same food.
Sure.
It was the same food. Everybody was just sitting in different sides of the room eating the same food.
Well, it was the same food in those two churches as well.
Exactly.
You know, there's so much going on in the world right now, whether it's stuff you're excited about, like the start of the NFL season, go Raiders! Or it's stuff you'd rather not think about, like a global crippling pandemic that won't go away. But you know what you can control, Rain?
What can you control?
You can control the vibes in your head with a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears.
Whether you use them to pump up, wind down, work, or work out, Raycons are our go-to for the on-the-go audio. And the new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. An improved rubber oil look and feel. They're very sleek.
They're small too. I really like how small they are.
The optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, and they're impressive. And before you even start listening, you get three sound profiles to make sure everything you're listening to sounds at its best with just the right amount of bass. And Raycons, most importantly, start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good, if not better. And Raycons come with a 45-day happiness guarantee. So right now, Metaphysical Milkshake listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/milkshake. That's buyraycon.com/milkshake to save 15% on your new Raycons. BUYRAYCON.com/.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Milkshake.
But going back to your childhood, you know, Rain brought up this really interesting connection between this idea of like the Holy Spirit, you know, the Holy Spirit coming down and inspiring you. And in Pentecostalism, you brought this up. There's also this notion of speaking in tongues or just like sort of free form speaking, because you are sort of not in control of your own imagination and your creativity. It's sort of it comes from the divine, right? It's God that comes upon you, and the music is almost spontaneous in a way. And he's right that that's exactly what the ancient Greeks believed, right? That was the whole point of the muses, the nine goddesses who, you know, were like the inspiration for all the arts and sciences. And And by the way, it's not just the Greeks. You know, you said it yourself. The concept of music was always thought of as a divine function, right? Who were the first musicians? Well, it was like the shaman, right? They would record the story of the tribe, and they would repeat it in verse, you know, with a melody. So from the very beginning, there seems to be this kind of notion, regardless of the specific religion or culture or time period, that we are not the ones who originate this creative thing, right, called music or even just art in general, that it comes from some outside source, you know, whether it's the muses or whether it's the Holy Spirit or whatever the case may be, that our job is to essentially just tune into that frequency that's out there already. And that if we can just tune in correctly, whether we pray to the muses or whether we open our hearts to Jesus, whatever the case may be, then that's where the creative process begins, outside of us, right? Not within us. How much of that do you think rings true to you insofar as the way that you have created music, created art?
I think if we tell the normies the truth, they'll kill us. We have to come up with something, you know. God made me do this.
God made me do it.
They don't understand it, so they think we're working some kind of black magic, man.
I love this.
And they'll burn us at the stake, you know. I think that we don't give ourselves enough credit as a collective consciousness, you know, the way we pass information to each other and the way we innovate and create as a species, I think is infinitely beautiful. And, you know, a lot of people that I care about would probably disagree with me on that, but I think we do a much better job than we give ourselves credit for just as humans. I think that all that can be contained within the human communal experience.
For Rain, you're an actor. You've had this experience.
Sure.
I think all artists have had this experience where, like, you do something, you create something, and
you have no idea where it came from.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you could be under torture and you couldn't tell say where it actually came from or how you came up with that decision, right, Rain?
Yes. I mean, I do that as an actor. I'm sure you do as a writer, Reza, but you do this preparation, you make plans of how you're going to play a character or something like that, and then you find something spontaneously and you don't know where it came from. I'll tell you a little story. Here's a fun little story. This is kind of what got me started acting. So at my high school in Chicago, New Trier High School, they had a very advanced acting program. I had moved there from blue-collar suburban Seattle, and there was this rich high school in Chicago. And I started acting, and one of the high school plays they did was Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. So it was really highfalutin play. And I was playing Alfred Doolittle, the Cockney working-class kind of philosopher father.
Let's hear the Cockney accent.
Hello, Liza. It's me, Alfred Doolittle, your father. Oh, I say, Governor, we've got some trouble brewing ahead.
How was that?
I believe it. I totally
still
believe
got it.
That's kind of how I did it. I did a lot of like this kind of rolling my shoulders. Anyway, here I am, first night in front of an audience, and I'm doing a monologue, and I'm there, and I'm acting as Alfred Doolittle. The set decoration had put a little bowl with chocolates on the table. And I kind of finished my spiel, saw the bowl, picked it up, and dumped the chocolates into my pocket and put the bowl back down on the table. I had never rehearsed it. I didn't think about it. I didn't plan it. It just felt like a good idea at the time for old Alfred Doolittle to do it. It got raucous laughter. We had to hold. We had to stop the play. And that's kind of when the penny dropped for me. I was kind of like, holy shit, there's something to this. I don't know what that was, but whatever that moment was, I want to be a part of that. I want to do that. I don't know the rehearsing and the memorizing lines and all this other stuff, but I want to be a part of that moment where there's magic.
I think that there's a lot about our unconscious mind that we don't understand. And it's easier to say that's magic than to say, I just don't know how my brain is working right now. But I do think that there is in all the chaos that there are patterns and that you can sometimes find yourself riding a wave. It's like when you're playing blackjack. Like I know, you guys know, if you're playing blackjack and there's six decks of cards, your odds for every single hand should really be the same. They should be pretty close to identical, whether you're playing at the top of the shoe, the middle of the shoe, or the end of the shoe. But if you've ever sat and played blackjack for days on end, like some of us degenerates, I'm speaking for a friend, I don't know. But if you've ever sat in the casino for way too long, you know that there are runs in luck, and that if you know when to bet, the odds are going to play out differently. And I think that sometimes if our sense of awareness is where it needs to be, and if we're living in the moment, and if our heads and our asses are in the same place, like they used to tell me in rehab, we catch one of those waves and we ride one of those little veins of gold inside all the chaos. You know, that's how I look at it.
But it's inside. I like the way that you're talking about this, because look, collective consciousness, that in and of itself is kind of a metaphysical idea.
That is magic. Yeah.
It's magic. You're right. We were doing a little bit of research on this kind of idea of like, where does music come from? You know, and we wanted to know like evolutionarily, where did music come from? Like why, what is the adaptive advantage of music? Because music is basically another form of language, but it's a more cumbersome form of language, so that doesn't really help us survive or anything.
I can tell you right now how it helps us multiply, Reza.
That's what I was just going to say.
There is no greater meaning to music than to try to get laid.
I have this quote right here. This is Darwin. Primeval man probably first used his voice in producing true musical cadences, as do some of the gibbon apes at the present day. And we may conclude that this power would have been especially exerted during the courtship of the sexes. Music evolved to get us laid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I think music is in every culture of the world. It's in every, you can go find a, mm-hmm. some lost tribe in the Amazon or Borneo or something like that. They'll have some kind of form of music. And, you know, I'm not a materialist. I believe that, you know, I believe in a higher power and I believe in a magic in the universe that's beyond the material, that's beyond molecules. And I think there's something truly mysterious about this human need to express in song and rhythm something to express our humanity. And yes, birds sing, but you know they sing to mate. I mean, I suppose that you could kind of quantify what their songs are for. But there's something really. As mysterious as consciousness itself, there is a mystery underlying this universal musical human impulse.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that because I feel like the significance of it has grown, and it's become so important, you know, to everybody in a way that it can't necessarily really just be to. Reproduce or to survive or to evolve. I mean, I also think that, like, I personally, I try to be careful of the magic of music because I think very often that's the story that you get told. Not you, but, you know, those were some of the stories that I was told. So I didn't figure out the truth, you know. I think Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil. Because there are a lot of white people who are real embarrassed that they couldn't play like Robert Johnson. And so they said, right. He won't show us how to do that. He sold his soul to
Satan.
The devil.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like aliens with the pyramids. It's like, no, just accept the fact that brown people built something you couldn't fucking build. Let's do that. You know, the magic is the difference between what we understand and what's happening. But, you know, I know that's kind of depressing.
Well, how do you start a song? You're writing a song. I know this is probably the tiredest question that musicians ever get asked, but it's such a mystery to me because I don't, you know, I'm an artist and, but I wouldn't know how to write a song. You could put a gun to my head. I don't know that I could write a song. Although my series of love songs to Reza Aslan might fill an album.
Yeah.
It's true.
But, yeah, you know how to write a song.
But how do you start with an image? You start with a lyric, a riff? Does it always change? Is it a memory? Is it a longing in your heart that needs expression?
Do you tap into that collective memory that you were talking about?
Sometimes I get on a wave. Yeah, every once in a while, I'll feel like I'm just riding something and hanging on.
Like a blackjack hand.
Exactly. Sometimes I'll feel like I'm just hanging on, you know, and that is magical. And I won't say that my wife would fucking kill me if she heard me say that there's no magic in that, because there is. But more often than not, like if I was going to sit down and write a song right now, which I'm not, but if I was going to, I would pick up a guitar and I would start playing the guitar and I would start humming a melody. And I would get a little bit of a melody first, and then I would vocalize that syllabically. You know, I would scan it into some type of gibberish words like scrambled eggs, like Paul was doing with scrambled eggs when he woke up that morning. And then I would replace that. You know, the majority of songwriting is edited for me. Because, you know, I wind up just immediately going back and fixing and going back, and you take, you know, one step up and two steps back, or two steps up and one step back, and you finally get somewhere. But sometimes it is a phrase. Like that happens a lot too. I take a ton of notes, just things that I say or things that I overhear. I jot them down on my phone or on a piece of paper or my computer or something, or I'll sing a voice memo to myself. I've got a whole bunch of voice memos. Like the song Traveling Alone on Southeastern, it was very literal. Sometimes it's so literal that it makes me laugh, that I think you are a cheesy bastard. You are an old man in a club with a dog right now. You are so corny because this is really what's happening to you and you're about to write a song about it.
So you were traveling alone?
Yes.
I'm tired of traveling alone. God, that sounds like a song. I get tired of traveling alone.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, you asshole. You can't do
idiot.
That.
But that's that country music thing where your heart is on your sleeve and you sing it. That's that part of country music that is universal and beautiful.
And courageous to say how you earnestly feel without hiding behind any kind of wit, you know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, I hate to put you on the spot, and you feel free to say no, truly, Jason. Do you have a guitar handy, and can you just strum a little bit and just hum something as in the context of you, how you would write a song? Just get, could you demonstrate this? And by the way, dear listeners, I understood that Jason's wife, Amanda Shires, who was also a brilliant violinist, singer, musician, songwriter, part of the... The Highway Women, Women.
The High Women.
She was a huge Office and Dwight fan. So I sent a care package of like signed bobbleheads and Office bric-a-brac. And I knew I was going to call in that favor. And this is it. I called in Jason Isbell.
I'm happy to, man, really, you got me a lot of points on that, because that year I was like, what do you want for Christmas this year, honey? And she was like, you know, I want this from Dwight Schrute. And I was like, Dwight Schrute is not a real person. So I would start like, to me, that sounds a little bit like the band, like Levon Helm, Robbie Robertson. That sounds like the night they drove old Dixie down, which conveniently, that song has been canceled because it's about the Confederacy. So what we should do now, if I were writing a song, would be write something to replace the night that drove old Dixie down. So now I have kind of a subject matter. So I would be like, well, let's write something about that war that's not celebrating the Confederacy. This is just what I would do right now. I'd make it kind of sound like the night they drove old Dixie down. So that's the exercise, is to like write a replacement for that. Not that I would ever do that, but... And here we're changing the melody a little bit later than we change the chord, because that's how we're creating tension and release. So like if you're walking down from the C major to the relative minor and you're singing like a five, now if I took the melody down at the same time as the chord change, it becomes Piano Man. That's not what you want, you know? You want something that makes it more tense, you know? So the part of that that sticks out to me is the da na na. So that's the part I would probably write first. I would say that's the part that's going to stick. So what are those words going to be? And then I would record that so I didn't forget it. And I would work on da na na, three syllables, you know, short word, long word, or three short words. Because if you do long word, short word, it's going to sing in a different way than it speaks, and you're cheating, you know, and people can hear that when you're cheating. So I would go short word, long word. And then I would start looking for a short word and a long word that had something to do with the reality of the story that was romanticized in the beautiful song, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down by the band.
This is amazing. You know what just happened just right there?
What happened?
It's the perfect melding of what we were just talking about, right? So someone can watch what Jason just did and be like, yeah, I mean, I could see the inspiration just kind of coming. Like, why start with that chord? And then suddenly something familiar came out of it. And that da, 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 like that was just, you know, it just sort of felt right. But listening to him talk, what was he talking about? He was talking about the South, which is where he's from. There was some churchy feel there to it, which is how he grew up. Right? There's some R&B feeling, which is like the theme, right? Well, I'm going to change the theme. It's the collective consciousness, right? It's a lifetime of experience that has gone beyond any kind of real conscious awareness of, and it just comes out and it looks like it was divinely inspired. But in reality, it is the sum total of place and spirit and experience and identity, and the song comes out of there.
But you know, there's magic in keeping yourself open to those creative ideas, you know, and that's the part that I don't necessarily understand, because at this point, after writing songs for this long, I have a switch that I flip. Well, it kind of always stays flipped to the creative side now. But I would never stop myself. Never. Like, that's the first mistake. You know, that's the first rule, is don't ever cut yourself off. If you're making something creative, try everything. Be open to everything. Go for it. If it looks stupid, nobody has to see it but you, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where the magic is. How do you get your mind into that place? How do you accumulate the experience and the knowledge to make what you want to make, not necessarily something that's good or bad, because then you're talking about taste, which is another version of the collective unconscious. But, you know, to make something that you want to make, once you know what you need to know, how do you keep access to that? And it's like when I was working on that movie over the summer, the Scorsese movie.
That Scorsese movie?
You know, over the summer.
That, when I was acting in that Scorsese movie over the summer.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, love the listening audience. Before we were recording, we're talking about, I made a little crack to Jason. I was like, okay, you can let your fake Southern accent go now and let's have a real conversation. And he was saying how Robert De Niro almost had the same reaction. Wasn't sure if it was a real accent or not. While shooting on the Scorsese film, I've been an actor for 30 years. I would do anything to be in a Scorsese film. I once peed next to Martin Scorsese at the Golden Globes, okay? I once said hello to Robert De Niro. I would do anything to be in that movie. Here I am struggling away, trying to get respect. Oh, you played this doofus on The Office. You'll never be in a Scorsese movie, you fucking idiot. And you've got a face like an old clown. I could play a redneck weirdo and learn your accent, Isbell. Do you understand?
I know. I believe it. I believe it.
Let's hear it. Let's hear your Jason Isbell.
Hey, how y'all doing down there in the, what's it called? Like Hot House of the Yellow Orchid or something like that? What's it called?
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite a flower moon we got up there. See? Boom.
I got no defense for that, Ray.
I think, Rain, if I may, I think they were like, look, we need someone opposite Leo DiCaprio who's not going to take all the attention away from DiCaprio.
Yes, that's
so
exactly
they couldn't
what it
have
was.
You,
oh,
Rain.
Maybe
they
that's just, what know, it was.
Yes. It's not the kind of movie where it's like this. It's not. It's like,
right.
He's here. They needed somebody who was basically furniture.
Yeah.
And you can't be furniture. You can be me, but you can't be furniture, Rain.
I can't be furniture. Thanks, guys. I feel so much better.
You were saying, Jason?
One of the things that I have done that I'm the most grateful for out of all the work I've ever done in my whole life was being out there on this movie. I wish I could tell you, Rain, that it sucked, but it was amazing. But one thing that I saw that blew my mind was the fact that there are these actresses who are all, they play sisters, they play Osage sisters, and they're from various different tribes around North America. They're not Osage, but they were playing Osage sisters, and they learned the Osage language for their lines. And you know, I noticed a lot of this movie is very sad, and a lot of the scenes, these women are crying. You know, and of course, the first time I saw that, I was like, "Oh, crying on cue! This is amazing! This is such great acting!" But then I realized after talking to them about this that that was not acting; that was traveling. They were not acting like they were crying. They were reaching and opening the door to the most horrible traumatic experiences that they had ever had. And the fact that they had to stay that close to that part of themselves while they were shooting these scenes just blew my mind, because I thought you just taught yourself to cry, but really you don't. You taught they had taught themselves to be that open, you know, and to allow themselves to go to those places, because they weren't faking that shit. They were bawling. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was insane. And I asked about it, and they were kind enough to tell me, you know, that they were going to these dark places in their past. And I was very sort of moved by that, you know, that being able to access that and still keep your head above water just as a human person.
But you've gone to some dark places yourself in your life, in your struggles with alcoholism and drug abuse, in your journey to sobriety. So was it easier for you to write songs through the haze of, chemicals?
Oh, no, that was way harder.
Because there's kind of a myth of the tortured artist who needs to be on drugs in order to create this brilliance.
Yeah.
And then once you lose that crutch, then you've lost your voice.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. But turns out that was just the part of me that wanted to keep on drinking and using drugs, you know. That was the guy on my shoulder going, yeah, you're not going to be able to do this if you let me go. I'm your best buddy, you know. Mm. I'm the only reason you can access these parts of yourself. Mm. Now, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I didn't have to sort of relearn how to get there, you know, and how to open myself up. And you know, because when you're drunk, you're mad, and then you're crying, and then you're ecstatic, and you're all these things, you know. So for a long time there, yeah, there was a wall up, and I had to learn how to make myself vulnerable again. And I still work on that all the time, every day. You know, but I definitely don't think, I mean, look at my career before and after, you know. Southeastern was the first album I made sober. I mean, that's, you know, that was a big, big turning point for me as far as every aspect, you know, creatively and just career and career terms, you know.
That's amazing. Jason, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, your thoughts, the magic, the muse, and giving us a little musical demonstration. Is unbelievable. What an incredible treat. Thank you for exploring this question with us today.
Thank you for having me. And I'm always happy to talk to you and love your work. And Reza, I ran around trying to tell people about Zealot years ago when I read it. And nobody in Franklin, Tennessee wanted to hear what I had to say about that book. So I just kept that little nugget of joy in my own heart.
Oh, that's sweet. I appreciate that, Jason. Thank you, man.
That book was a big deal to me. Big deal.
Before we let you go, we do a lightning round. Questions. First thing that comes into your mind, we're going to pepper you with profound and ridiculous questions, and you're going to illuminate us. Describe your soul in 10 words or less.
My soul is rubber.
What was the happiest day of your life?
When my daughter was born. It was also the scariest. It was both. It was happiest and scariest.
Yeah. I love it when those two emotions go hand in hand.
That's the easy answer. I mean, that's how it's... Then you feel alive for real, don't you?
What emotion do you wish you could better control?
Frustration, like that... It's like it's a secondary, probably a tertiary emotion of fear. I mean, that answer is always going to be fear. But I wish that I was better at showing people that I'm truly happy on the inside. Because sometimes I do the old male depression party, and I'm a grumpy, big grumpy Alabama man. You know,
what happens to us after we die?
Who cares?
No one's ever answered that. I like that.
What is something very few people know about you? I mean, very few, like a handful.
I love Dua Lipa.
What is America?
An experiment. The results aren't in yet.
What book changed your life besides Zealot by Reza Aslan?
Yes.
Available
on paperback.
I think Shadow Country by Peter Matheson. That might be my favorite piece of fiction ever written. And it just taught me so much about how the story changes depending on who's telling it.
You're stranded on a deserted island. You have a record player and you can bring three records.
Sticky Fingers.
Wait. You would bring Sticky Fingers over Exiles on Main Street?
Over Exile. Oh, yes, I would. Wow. I've had this argument with a lot of people. but, you know, I'm from Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And Wild Horses was recorded in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
All right, you got two more discs. Let's go. Time is money.
Equimini.
Nice.
Equimini.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Outcast, yo.
Oh, okay.
Rain isn't cool, is one thing you should know.
I think Equimini is a beautiful, beautiful piece of work. And probably the complete Robert Johnson recording.
Is humanity doomed?
I don't think... Okay, it's kind of like, you know, when people get a divorce and they say their marriage failed. I think, no, it didn't. It succeeded for so long, you know. It just didn't last forever. I think humanity is blessed with the experience of living on this planet that we have made uninhabitable for ourselves. And yeah, one day we'll be gone. We're not getting nothing. Not everything's doomed. But, you know, we've had this opportunity to have some time in this form. And that's been really badass for a lot of us.
If you could have coffee with 15-year-old Jason Isbell, what would you tell him?
Don't drink coffee. You're 15 years old. What are you doing? You're going to be up all night.
Jason, finally, we like to end with, what is your life's biggest big question?
What is right and what is wrong? And, you know, it's a small question that I answer every time I make a decision, I think, or most of the time. A lot of things are just easy. But I wind up thinking, you know, what is right and what is wrong? And I try to stop there. Once I've decided that, I like to act, you know. But yeah, what are the stakes in the battle between right and wrong? Not is it worth it to do the right thing, but why is it worth it to do the right thing? That's the question for me.
Well, Jason Isbell, I want to thank the muses for this conversation. Not you. You didn't have anything to do with it. It just came from outside. Yeah, you're just a conduit. So I want to thank all the divine gods / goddesses who made this conversation happen. This is really fascinating, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you guys enjoyed talking with me because I really enjoyed talking with y'all. I did.
This was a pleasure and an honor, and I can't wait to not see you in that Scorsese film.
Thank you, Rain.
Yeah.
Same here.
You know, they have those classes, master class, where you can watch Bobby Flay cook a fish, you know, or Venus Williams do a tennis serve. Watching Jason Isbell, and I know it was just a little fun little side riff that we didn't have pre-planned at all, but just for those 7 minutes with his guitar, talking us through a songwriting process and his thought process, that was absolutely incredible. There was something so mysterious and yet really practical at the same time. You know, it was very grounded, very real, very meat and potatoes, nothing airy-fairy about it. But yet at the same time, something kind of beautiful and mystical going on. I feel privileged to have witnessed that.
I feel the same. I really loved it. And so much of it is about, I mean, you know, longtime listeners of our podcast know that one of the things that drives us is our refusal to give any, you know, real sort of attention to this dichotomy, right? Material, spiritual, you know, body, soul. Like, that's not how we are. We think that it's all the same, right? It's all one thing. And so it was so funny to have a guest call us on it who was like, it's like, no, it's not some, you know, it's mysterious, you know, muse.
Mm.
It's the collective unconscious, which in and of itself is mysterious, right? Like, you don't need to go out there to look for some metaphysical, existential answer to where art comes from. It's already existential. It's already metaphysical from within you, right? That the magic is inside of you. I thought that was really, really beautiful.
That was really fantastic.
And look, I'm going to be honest with you. It brought me back to my... to my rock star days. I feel like maybe Jason and I ought to, I mean, is he looking for an opening act? I mean, I can get the band back together again. I can call Pike.
Remember, you still need to prove to us that you were in the band Pike, and I'm going to need to hear some beautiful dulcet tones, some lyrics from the band Pike. What are you going to be singing from? Which song?
Yeah. The song is called Untitled, one of our biggest hits. She gets in the front row. The smell of fog machines makes her come. See, now it could be like sexual. It could be, you know, what are we talking about here?
Is that
she
for real?
She falls down like a domino.
You were in a Christian rock band talking about women coming?
No, she came to the show. Jesus Christ, Rain. Your mind immediately goes into the garbage.
My mind was in the gutter. Reza, having heard you sing, I just have one thing to say. Can I join Pike? Please. I want to be a part of this.
Ooh. Like as a roadie? Like you want to like tune our instruments?
No, I don't want to be a roadie. I want to be in the band. I want to sing harmony with you. I'll play any instrument, whatever you need. Bassoon, whatever you need.
You know, every rock band does need a bassoon. So, you know, this question of where inspiration comes from really sparked a lot of conversation amongst our listeners. We want to know what inspires you. Where do you think inspiration comes from? Is it from within? Is it from outside? Do you agree with Jason where it's about like a collective consciousness that exists within us? Or are you more like the Greeks where you think that it's the muses or some divine source that inspires you? We got a lot of answers to this question, Rain.
Really?
We got the top three here. Top three answers about where inspiration comes from.
Okay, great.
First one is Melissa.
Hello, Rain and Reza. My name's Melissa, and I get my inspiration. So I love writing. I'm a writer, and I get my inspiration when I go on walks. I don't have anything in front of me except for the environment and other people and observing things and taking in all the stimuli. And that makes me feel like my mind can go in places and connect the dots and come up with my own reality and my own stories about what I see is going on around me. And then when I get home, I have all this energy and I put hand to laptop and my mind just explores because it's open and not hampered by technology or something else like social media in front of my mind. So that's where my inspiration comes from. Nature, outdoors, walking. That's it.
The first thing that brought to mind is I was reading this incredible article not long ago that talks about the power of walking and that, you know, look, our species is what, 200,000-300,000 years old, and we've always walked up until about, I don't know, 50 years ago or so, we stopped walking.
Yeah.
And then that's when there's been this incredible outbreak of this mental health epidemic and anxiety and depression. I'm not saying it's a complete corollary, but at the same time, there's something remarkably healing about walking.
Yeah.
And it's literally how it works in our brain. They've done brain studies where right foot, left foot, it kind of like, it's like the therapy EMDR where your neuro impulses go from left hemisphere to right hemisphere and back again. There is something healing and soothing about the act of walking. And I couldn't agree with her more.
You know, it's funny. I have a friend, Gabriel Caressi, who's a phenomenal poet. And she writes all of her poems while walking. Like she doesn't like, you know, she doesn't have a piece of paper or pen or she doesn't sit down somewhere. Like she writes while she walks. So it's a very common place of inspiration here. Thank you very much, Melissa. We got one more person here. This is Blair.
This is Blair Ellistead. I'm a Toronto-based colorist, and what inspires me is many things, but most notably in my profession, the amazing world around me. Landscapes, architecture, natural colors of the world, people, faces, emotions. It's all right there in front of you.
That dude needs to be on radio.
He's got a great voice.
Blair, find yourself a podcast.
But when he said colorist, and then he said, and looking at the world around me, like the shampooers and the hairstylists and the receptionist at the front and the scissors and the barbicide, isn't that colorist?
Maybe he meant colorist like film colorist.
Thank you for your beautiful voice and your inspiration and this quest that you have provided for us to find out what a colorist does.
All right, let's do one more. This is Laura.
My name is Laura, and I'm an interior designer. It's hard to put my finger on what it is exactly that excites me creatively, but when I see that certain thing, whether it be art, film, or travel, I just have this feeling of excitement. It's inspirational, it transports me, and it helps me think of new, interesting ways to translate it into my job, really.
Fantastic. Wow, that's beautiful. You know, I think everyone can be creative, and it's fantastic to hear these stories and these examples of people finding inspiration and creativity all around them. I think it's an important message to keep relaying, that creativity and inspiration is just there for us to find. Thank you, listeners, for writing in, for calling into our speak pipe. If you want to leave us a life speak question, a thought on one of our episodes, you can contact us at SpeakPipe, which is speakpipe.com/metaphysicalmilkshake, and leave us an audio message. We may use it, and it will be delicious. Thank you, Jason Isbell, for diving deep with the Metaphysical Milkshake team. Do you want more of life's big questions? Find us on the socials, please, at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson. And on Twitter, at MetaMilk Podcast, and Instagram, at Metaphysical Milkshake. And let us know your life's big questions. We might explore them on a future episode. We might bring you on a future episode to be featured. So please, please write us.
Yeah, and tell us where you fall on this whole, where does music come from? Is it... do you believe in divine inspiration? Do you believe in the muses? Or do you think it's just a guy sits down with a guitar and a pad and a piece of paper and a pen and just works it? Works it like he's working the fry station at McDonald's.
Also, remember to follow, rate, and review Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to podcasts. We really rely on your reviews. So thank you very much for that. Please subscribe to Metaphysical Milkshake on YouTube channel, and you can watch us talking instead of just listening to us talking.
See you next week.
She gets in the front row. Smell of fog machines makes her calm.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Dear Lord.
Come on. That's a hit. That's good. A hit right there.
It's good. It's really, really good.
Jason Isbell, call me. Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It's produced by Safa Samizadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick Demaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. It is edited by Tyler Newbold and audio mixed by Justin Kyle. Original music is composed by Jeff Tang.
I tell you what, Jason, $100,000. I will dress up as Dwight Schrute and make love to your wife.
Do not let her hear this. Man, come on. Like, can you cut that out of the program?
Yeah, well, don't worry. It's going in. We will definitely edit that part
out. If not, it's going out $100,000 and possibly some of my pride. I don't know how it's going to work out, but it might cost me some of my pride.
But think of the song that'll come out of it, though.
But I'll get a song out of it.